And now join me in giving a big welcome, and I'm sure there's a lot of your fans here, Reggie, who is going to be our main speaker, Reggie W. from LA.
Thank you, Brenda. My name is Reggie White, and I'm an alcoholic. I want to thank you, Inet, for inviting me out. Thank you so much, Brenda, for your service. Jules, that was fantastic. Thank you so much. I got a meeting in today, and hopefully I can live up to you with what I have to say. And I want to welcome our new friends, Joe James, Steve, and Armando, if I'm not mistaken. And then, of course, my good friend Gypsy with 60 days. And I believe Natalie had about 120. I want to welcome all of you guys to the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous and let you know that this program works and it works well. And you can stop right where you are right now, and you have a chance to have a good life from this point forward. You know, you can raise your bottom. I remember I came here very high bottom drunk. I didn't have to go all the way down when I first got here. You know, I was sitting here thinking about that. I was sitting here thinking, when I first came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I had season tickets. Third row back under the basket during the Showtime period with the Lakers, you know, right there. And I used to go to all those playoff games and have such a good time. And I was sitting there trying to think, whatever happened to those season tickets? Because I don't really remember. Because, see, I'm the kind of guy where when things get rough, I'll walk away from it because I'm too embarrassed to come back and say anything or see what's going on. I'm a cat who came up a guy who grew up in Watts. I got five brothers. My mom raised us six boys by herself. Once my dad, who was an alcoholic, left the house, he was a wino, a cheap wino, not a rough, tough wino. You know, he was just an absentee guy. He would come in, he would go to work 5 days a week. Then he would get paid on Friday, and he'd never make it home with that check. When he would come home on Sunday night or Monday morning or whatever, he never had any money. My mother would cry. Things would be messed up. And I was really glad to see him gone. I thought he was weak. I said, I'll never be an alcoholic. I'll never drink that cheap Ripple like he drank, which I never did. And I got much better when he was gone. Now, I'm also a church guy. You know, my earliest memories are my mom walking all six of us to church all the time. And you know, we were high achievers, right? Even though we were in the poorest part of Los Angeles in Watts. And to me, to my mind, we were the poorest family in the poorest part of LA. We had a lot of love and things were good and we were happy, other than when I was always trotting around the church. Because see, they would march all of us around the church, and that wasn't a real popular thing in Watts in those days. But I want to let you know my religious background. I had a relationship with God. It wasn't my God, it was their God. But I had a relationship, and we would go in that church, and they would seem like we'd be in there for junior church, then devotion, then regular church, then choir practice, Bible study. Then in the summer, when everybody else is out playing ball and stuff, we go in the vacation Bible school. And I couldn't wait till a day when my mother stopped having me sit on that pew next to her. And I got to go in the balcony with my friends, and we'd be playing around up there. Or I would basically, because I'm a bookworm, I'm a nerd, I'd sit there reading the New Testament, because that's where the stories were in the Bible, you know. And I would sit there and I would look at you and look and say, yeah, that's a hypocrite, that's a hypocrite, that's a hypocrite. You know, just judging people, basically. And that was my whole thing with church. Couldn't wait. Well, I didn't have to go anymore. I think my brother said he was able to stop when he was 16. But when I stopped. I was about 12, so I was happy. I got to stop early and start looking at football. Anyway, we were a high-achieving family. I was always, you guys knew me in school. I'm that guy you called me, Poindexter, Mr. Peabody, all that stuff, the professor, all that. But you also loved me because I was student body president. I was funny. I was a jokester. I would let you cheat off my paper. I was funny. I would talk to women. I always had a girlfriend. I played sports. I was good at baseball. Wanted to be a Dodger when I grew up. Loved Maury Wills. Wanted to be a Dodger. and life was just good. You know, I didn't, and a lot of people will talk like they, you know, they started so early and they were drinking at 13 and blah, blah, blah. Man, I didn't start nothing until I got to college. You know, because I had goals. I had dreams. I had aspirations. My brothers were also really smart. All of us were the first ones going to college, and I followed in their footsteps all the way up. They were smartest guys. Then I'd be right behind them each step of the way. And then we came in this fellowship each step of the way right behind each other. I got three brothers in AA, have over 30 years sobriety. Anyway, one of my first memories, see, I, like I said, I didn't touch anything till late. And I'm going, I don't even know how long I'm going. Wait a minute, how long do I go, Brenda? You're muted. Okay, guess you'll stay muted. I guess I'll just keep going until I run out of breath.
It's 45 minutes, Reggie, 45 minutes, probably about, I don't know, quarter after maybe, quarter after nine?
Thank you, dear. Thank you, Aynette. Okay. Anyway, I was in college, right? Anyway, like I said, always had girlfriends and stuff. Even, and I mean, and I'm this cat who's really shy, right? I'm popular, I'm funny and all that, but I'm shy. You know, the school dances go on and I'm that cat standing on that wall. And I look at you guys on that wall. I look at Aynette over there on that wall. And I'd be like, yeah, that honey looked good. I need to go over there and get with that. But that means I got to walk all the way across that floor. Then when I get over there, see, I was a great mind reader. Aynette's going to tell me no. And I'm going to walk all the way back while everybody in the gym is laughing at me because they see me get over there and hear that no. Now, what would happen worse than that? What if she said yes, and I got out there to dance, and I'm the worst dancing black man in L.A.? So now I'm out here. No. So it was just a no-win. Anyway, I always wanted to have a sister or something. I thought I'd learned how to dance then, but I grew up with five brothers. Wasn't nothing going on. So anyway, I get into college. I'm living on third base at this time. Some of you guys know what I'm talking about. I would always get the first, second, third. I lived on third base, but I was scared to go for home. So I got to college. I'm a smart guy. I'm always the smartest guy. I'm always the popular guy. I'm always the guy out in front on everything. I'm a leader all the way. That's how we were raised. But I had to get some sponsors to help. Man, I needed some social skills bad. And they taught me exactly what they knew. Said, you give these girls some liquor, you get some alcohol, you'll score. And sure enough, I got alcohol. And since I hated the taste of alcohol, I got some weed to go with it, and I was scoring. And I had arrived, and life got good. And so now I'm popular. See, and I had goals. Like I said, we were going to be White, White, White Incorporated, a law firm, and we were going to help poor people and raise people up, you know, because I hated bullies and I hated injustice. I wanted to help people. We read a lot of books and looked at TV, and I always wanted to be that hero, you know, which manifested itself in Captain Save-A-Ho-ism later. But anyway, at that time, I really wanted to do good. I said, I'm going to get my mother a house. I'm going to be a millionaire by the time I'm 30. Maybe I'm going to go on and go up in politics, in Congress or something. I'm going to be somebody special. I'm going to be somebody important. By the time I got out of college, and by this time, I'm over in D.C. because I was one of the top political science students in the country. It sent me there, and I'm still killing it there and working in Congress and doing stuff. But my goals then were I had a list of girls I wanted to knock off, had a whole top 10 list, and we're competing to see, you know, stuff like that. That's my goals. And I forgot to apply for law school. Anyway, came back to L.A. I had great jobs. I was always able to get great jobs. I'm always the boss. I'm always popular. I'm always good because my mother raised us right, and I always learned. And I remember, I love my mother. You know, my mother was the best person I knew. My mother raised six boys by herself, put herself in high school, put herself in college, working two jobs, president of PTA. She was started off cleaning people's floors, you know, like being the cleaning person in their homes and stuff, and being the nanny. And she worked her way all the way up. And she always had the best morals, and she was sharp. And I said, I will always treat the people who clean the friggin' building just the same as I'll treat the owner of the company. And I always had good values. I always had good morals. And I took that through life. And that's how I was raised. And that's how I live. And I always felt I was going to live and do that way. Now, even though I forgot to go to law school, I was still very successful in the business world. And things were great. By this time, I'm drinking. I'm smoking medicinal marijuana. It was an herb. It was natural. Using mushrooms. I started off on PCP, you know, was able to quit that though. I quit, which was one of the worst things that ever happened to me, because I figured if I could quit that, whenever anything got to be too much, I could quit. Like I quit the PCP, you know, big mistake. Added in a whole bunch of other things, you know, and stuff like that. But life still was good because I'm a really sharp guy. And if you're sharp like me and you have a great position and you're making good money and you got a nice car and you got a nice place, you need to have a nice woman or two on your arm, and you need to, you know, you need to be doing things. And I remember I used to love to be able to do stuff for my mom and help her out. And life was just good like that. Until it wasn't. Then things started to go a little bit bad. We added too many things in there where I'm walking the streets at night and stuff like that. And this was around 1984. And I remember at that point, that's when I'm still having my season tickets to the Lakers, and I'm there during us playing the Celtics and all that. I'm three rows back and the Dodgers, and we're going to track meets and we're going to concerts. And I'm thinking I'm living the life, even though I thought back on it lately. We go down to the Cool Jazz Festival and we go down there for that concert. And there's a bunch of different acts down there and stuff like that. And we go, and then we get to the motel. I used to say the hotel, but I remember it was a motel. And I never made it to the concert. You know, never made it out the room. We'd be in the room the entire time partying. And I'll come back talking about how great a time I had at the concert. We would go up to track meets up north, talking about how great a time I had. I remember when I went to see the Mothership, and I passed out before the concert, right? Because I'm drinking and it's hot, you know, and I passed out and stuff. And I came away from that talking about everybody else talking about how great it was, and I'm talking about how great it was, best concert of my life. And alcohol was kicking my ass, and I was swearing I was having a good time. And see, I realized that was something I realized in the doctor's opinion when I got here, because I failed to differentiate the truth from the false. In other words, I couldn't tell the truth from a lie in my own head. I'm telling myself that I'm having a ball, and alcohol is kicking my ass. But anyway, things got bad in 1984, and I stopped living so good. I started losing things. Like I lost started not having ID, not having a car, not paying my rent, not being on top of things at work. I'm missing work and stuff like that, even though I'm the boss. Coming to work on Monday and I'm borrowing money for cigarettes and stuff like that from my employees. And I'm, by this time, I'm eating dinner every night at this restaurant. Well, this restaurant was called the Red Onion, and dinner was, it was happy hour, and they had free wings and stuff there. I go to drink and stuff. And then at the end of the night, after I eat my dinner, at the end of the night, I look and I find somebody, a drunk I net or somebody sitting over there, and I give them my interview. You know, that four-word interview. Do you get high? Boom. Whoever said yes first, they were the winner. And that's how I live. And caught up with me. I lost my place. I remember I left all my furniture and left my girlfriend in the place. Never said a word to her. I haven't said a word, seen her since. I have no idea what happened to her. And I went down to my mom's house. Thank God she didn't know where that was. And I moved in. Now, when I moved in there, five of my brothers were already there, because we all at the same time had blown up our lives. We were all high achievers, all people going to college, doing things, having aspirations. Now we're all back at my mom's house in 1984. My mother almost died. Got five guys drinking and using in her house. Guys, the sons that she's so proud of and used to brag on so much. And now we're all back there killing her. We all love her. And it was killing me. And eventually two of my brothers disappeared in 1986. I didn't know where they were, you know? And I'm in Hollywood one day and I ran in there. I'm standing there, I'm on a drug run, but I'm making it on the bus. I didn't have a car. The car cost, you know, at that time, that was too much trouble. I needed a car. And he saw me standing there, my brother Ronald, and he said, hey, let's go have lunch. And I looked at him and he was looking really good. His eyes were clear. His hair was cut. His hair hadn't been cut in years. His eyes weren't that clear in years. He smelled good. He had on nice clothes. He was, you know, he was back to the guy I used to know. And I wasn't that guy anymore. And I looked at him and I said, sure, let's go to lunch. And we went and we ate at House of Shandara. And when we got through eating, he broke out a roll of $20 bills. And I looked at him and I said, man, you're really looking good. And you look like you're really doing good. What happened? And he said, I don't drink and use. He said, I went to this place called the Salvation Army Harbor Light Center on 5th Street, down on Skid Row. He said, it's a program and I no longer drink, I no longer use. And if you ever want to quit, I can get you in there. And see, that's all he said to me, that simply. He didn't preach, he didn't lecture, he didn't advise, nothing like that. And I looked at him and I thought to myself, man, scandalous as you were, you need to be up in there. And I said, loan me $40. He said, no, son of a bitch. And I just kept it pushing. But the seed was planted. And when I went one more time with this girl's car from the valley to LA and couldn't make it back, I thought about him and Ralph in that Harbor-like place. And I called, couldn't reach Ronnie, I reached Ralph. Asked Ralph to take that car back for me because remember, I'm a coward. And he said he'd take the car back. That was on a Friday, but he said I have to go in this place. And tired as I was, I figured I had one more weekend left in me. So I said, can I go in on Monday? He said, no, you got to go right now. So I said, okay. And I went in there. I was so tired. I remember how tired I was. That's the one thing I remember. I stank and I was tired. I couldn't believe the people were sitting there just like acting like there was nothing wrong with me. And I told them I was an alcoholic, which I didn't believe at that time. But that's what you had to say to get in. And I was praying for them to say yes, they let me in. Praying. And they said yes. And they let me in. And I walked in that place. And I had never heard of rehab. I'd never heard of AA, none of this stuff. I didn't know there was anything you could do. I didn't even know I had a problem. I just thought, only I could figure out how to not spend all my money and you know, you guys know. Anyway, new friends, I looked at you guys. You guys don't look anything like the people I saw up in this place. See, Salvation Army Harbor Light Center is on Skid Row. And I walked in there and it looked like Skid Row in there. And I said, oh my God, what am I doing in this place? Everybody in there looked like they belong eating out of a trash can somewhere out on the street. So I'm walking in there judging them while I had absolutely nothing going on with my life. And but I stayed because I was so tired. And all I wanted to do was sleep. And all I wanted to do was sleep without worrying about somebody coming in there asking me where was the rent or asking me where their money was or nagging me and saying, why wasn't I going to work? I'd lost a job, which is why I went on in there. And that's all I wanted to do, rest for a minute, just long enough to get it together, go out, get me a temp job, get me a regular job, and get my stuff, and just get back going again. But it took me to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous in this place. They brought in a panel from the outside, and these kids, you know, but one of them said something about, if you get a sponsor and you read this book, your life will get better. I said, I looked around that room and I said, read a book? Oh, hell yeah, I can read a book. I can read the hell out of this book and I'm going to get an A in AA and I'm going to do better than everybody else in here. You know, I'm judging everything. Man, I made that guy my sponsor. I read that book all in one night and I got the first piece of hope in Alcoholics Anonymous. As soon as I opened the book, by coincidence, I opened it up and it said, there is a solution. And then but they said to take it from the start. And I started reading that book and man, my heart sank. Because I thought, man, y'all tricked me. I thought I was going in there so you guys could teach me how to drink and smoke some weed and keep my job and keep my car, have my car and license and insurance and registration all at the same time. I thought you would have me with a girlfriend, because I really was a square and I wanted to have a whole family, you know, and that was my real heart. And I would have that. I would have a wife, some kids. I would have that house. I would help my mom. Everything would be cool. And I could sit and have dinner and then sit back and smoke my cigarette and smoke my... Anyway, y'all said I couldn't do anything. And I'm like, man, my brother's down at this place called 9604 South Figueroa. Because see, that AA up in there, the rehab place gave me 90 days of time, putting time and distance between me and the last one. You know, and they gave me a big book and they introduced me to Alcoholics Anonymous. New friends, if you get nothing else out of whatever you're doing now, you get that. And my life got better from that. I went down to this place called 9604 South Figueroa and I fell in love with Alcoholics Anonymous. I walked in that room and I was so scared when I walked in. And the first thing that happened was some ladies looked at me and they said, oh, you one of the White Brothers. And what's your name? And I said, Reggie, and my chest puffed up because I brought two road dogs with me. And I got real happy. And then I sat down because I'm looking at the coffee, but I'm thinking they might ask us to pay for it. And I ain't had a dime. And they told me, people were telling me, no, go on up and get you some coffee. And they were friendly to me. And they asked me my name. And they reached their hands out. They kept telling me, keep coming back. And I was looking around and I'm looking and people look like, and they look sharp and they look, it was all kind of different looking guys up in their gang bang. But everybody, what the amazing part to me is, whoever walked up to that podium, they were saying, it sounded like music to me because they were all singing that same song. They started talking about God. They started talking about step. They started talking about, just spiritual things. They said about the allergy of the body, the mental obsession, the spiritual malady. That one kind of scared me because I was like, oh, here go that God thing. But like Ralph and Ronnie are doing this. So if they doing it, I'm going to follow them because if there's a way around this, they got it. But it turned out there was no way around it. And the life got so good and AA so fast for me that I just jumped in it and I loved it. They had me, I started with the little stuff, you know, the ashtrays, the setting up meetings, all this stuff, got a whole bunch of friends, then went to a whole bunch of meetings. Then I started going on panels. I went to these jails. They start taking me to prisons on panels. They had me a secretary of meetings. I got a sponsor in there. I had sponsees. Life got really good. This was February 17, 1987, when I started at the Harbor Light. By November, we started the Sunday Never Too Early Big Workshop. Ralph and Ronnie started it. I'm there around the table with 12 other people initially, and life took off. We took these steps. I got a job, an excellent job. With that excellent job, I met my new wife because she was working at a company, and she looked at me and said, you're an AA, aren't you? And I'm like, yeah, and we hit it off. She had a son. I had a ready-made family. That job, I got recruited to another job with the richest guy in California, a guy named Eli Broad. I was a direct report, bringing this company back from Atlanta. I have over 250 employees. I'm making six figures, less than a year of sobriety. Life just took off for me. I got the home, I got the cars, I got the girl, I got the family. Everything was good. Christmases were good. I was able to make these Christmases for these kids like I never had, because I always got underwear and socks. My friend told me, just stop whining about the underwear and socks thing. I hear you, Gypsy. So I stopped whining about that, you know, but that's what I always got seemed like, you know, we had board games for everybody and I had hand-me-downs. I was sick of that. But anyway, life was great. My brothers would all come over. We would all on Friday nights have movie night and I'd have people over, have my brothers over to my house and their girlfriends and my girl and life, man, just took off. Then I started going to Atlanta. They had to move to Atlanta with the company and gave me an apartment there and I'm a big shot now. And I couldn't do all the things I've been doing in AA. And the life that AA gave me started getting in the way of my AA life. You know, it's a cautionary tale to some of our people who are here, been here a while. It started to get in the way of my AA life, but man, God was good. You know, because when things are going good, God is good. Now, when things are going bad, the devil is busy. But things were all good, and God was good, and I wasn't able to keep doing all the things that I had been doing because I'm flying back and forth, and my family's in West Hollywood, and if an alcoholic fails to perfect and enlarge his spiritual life through self-sacrifice and working with others, he will not be able to survive the certain trials and low spots ahead. And if he cannot, he will drink. And if he drinks, he will. You know, that's what Bill said. I think Bill's story. The life that AA gave me got in the way of my AA life. It wasn't intentional. It wasn't anything bad. I still had God with me. As far as the sobriety thing, I'm praying. I'm did the third step prayer. I went through all these steps. Now I'm not going to the workshop anymore because I'm not in town. I'm dropping in the meetings when I can, but I'm going to meetings for me, not for anybody else. Self-sacrifice and working with others. Many of the self-sacrifice going on. But I had a daughter. I got a daughter. Didn't think I could have a daughter because I had been barebacking it all my life, never got anybody pregnant, but I had the miracle baby. And I was so happy. And the best thing in the world I've ever been was a father. I was a great father. I was a good husband, but I was a great father. And when I talk about those trials, see, my little girl got sick. See, I was back in LA by then. My little girl got sick. We had her at Children's Hospital. She got sicker and sicker and sicker. And for 4 months, it was like she was in agony. We couldn't figure out, they couldn't figure out what was wrong with her. I'm like, no, we got the best of everything. Take her to Cedar Sinai. We took her there, and she was in such pain, they had to intubate her. So they put her out. The guys rallied around us. See, friends, Alcoholics Anonymous, that's the good thing about having a base in Alcoholics Anonymous. Everybody rallied around us. Everybody came from AA. Every single minute of every single day, that little girl wasn't alone for 1 second in that hospital. Then all the church ladies came, because my mom is Miss Church Lady. All the church people came, and all of AA came. And then we're all praying. I said, God, just take my life, not hers. Just let her live, whatever her situation would be. And see, God, I remember I didn't believe, though. Out. And anyway, they told us that she was gonna be well. And they told us they had figured out what was wrong with her. And they just had to do an experimental surgery, and we signed off on it. And they opened her up and they killed my baby. And when they killed her, they killed me. And when my baby died, it's like a trap door opened under me, and I couldn't hear. It's like, you know, that scene where people are talking, they're just moving their mouths and I can't hear. And I couldn't see. Hey, new friends, Armando, Joe, James, Steve, especially our men. But yeah, Gypsy and to, we're supposed to protect and provide for our little ones. You know, and at that age, she loved me. She thought I was her God. She thought I could make anything go away, any pain go away. I could fix anything. And I thought I could too when I was, you know, I questioned and I guess I couldn't figure out what I had done wrong. And I thought maybe I didn't believe enough. And for years I thought that. And when she died, I cursed God. I said, fuck you, God. You need to tell me why did she have to, if she was gonna die, why not let her die? Why did she have to suffer so long? It wasn't that I stopped believing in God, but I hated God. And I used to say that I went and got loaded because of that. Because, see, I'm a cautionary tale. I didn't go get loaded because my little girl died. I lasted 11 months like that. I was just so angry all the time. I remember I wrapped that anger around me like a warm blanket on a cold day. And I hated you, I hated God, I hated everybody. And at the 11-month mark, I went and drank. That's when I realized I was an alcoholic. And after I drank for 2 weeks in that bar. And then after 2 weeks, I looked over and I saw Inette, and she had on that short skirt, the long legs and the low cut. And she gave me that look, and I gave that same interview I always gave. Do you get high? And she said, yes, and I was off and running for 2 weeks. And I knew there was no hope there. And on the anniversary of my little girl's death, I took a lot of pills and I killed myself. And they had to bring me back from death. But I wanted to go see God. I wanted to see my little girl. That's all I wanted in this life. And when I looked up and saw all the people that loved me around me, I hated everybody even more then. I couldn't believe. I was so angry then. That was the second worst day of my life. And had I known what was to be in front of me for the next 15 years, I would have tried again, you know? And I tell you, I was a high bottom drunk when I came in, and over the next 15 years, I became a low bottom drunk. Things got real rough for me. It took me about 5 years before I even tried to get back to you guys, and I tried to sneak. Somebody here said earlier that they didn't want to come in and raise their hand as new and all this stuff. I hear you. I feel you. I understand you. It's nothing worse than trying to come back to this fellowship. And I used to try to come to the meetings late after you asked for newcomers and leave early before you asked for the newcomers. So I'm just at meetings, not in meetings. And I'm not talking to anybody. And I'm trying to sneak back to this fellowship. And I'm sponsoring myself and taking myself through the book. And I had a full force sponsor. Then in 2009, I developed glaucoma. I have 0% vision in my right eye and 30% in my left. And I'm cursing God harder because now I'm blind and I can't work. Things got really bad. And then now all of a sudden the real low bottom stuff comes in. I can't work, so now I'm broke. I can't support my own habits. And now I'm doing demoralizing things, and I'm going with the lower and lower companion. I remember I lost the place that I live. I remember I made it back to this fellowship, and I even got a year of sobriety, but see, I did it without God. You know, I had a sponsor. I worked the great steps 1 through 4, in a solid step 5. Then I looked at 6 and 7 and said, why? I wrote an 8th step. Then I skipped on to 12 and 13, you know, and I tried to do it that way. And that didn't work. I remember losing everything because now I'm at the Big Book Workshop and I'm sneaking to go to this girlfriend of mine who's in prison, coming out of prison because she was using. And I'm trying to say, well, I'm doing God's work. I'm going to bring AA back to her because she was trying to get sober as well. And I wasn't doing God's work. I was trying to do my work. I wasn't doing it in the way of self-sacrifice and working with others. There was no self-sacrifice. It was self-serving. And I couldn't. And next thing I know, I'm behind that garage and I'm like living there. I'm living in a garage because my mom won't have me in her house. And I remember I went back to AA again. Well, I left there, got sober again, had to come back again. And it was just all a mess. And I just couldn't stay here. And then, thank God that God doesn't let misery be comfortable. That same girlfriend stole my mom's girlfriend, stole my mother's car one more time. And when she stole my mother's car, it came in and they told me I had to go. And I made this one right decision and gave God room to step in with some grace. I went back to that same program the third time in a 5-year period. When I went back to that program, my sponsor was there and he was running the place. And I told him, I have to work these steps right now. I don't have another recovery in me. And he said he was ready. And I said, let's go right now. I can't wait. And I did the steps. As hard as anybody, I like to say it's Karate Kid style, you know, where he said, wax on, wax off. And the kid said, well, wait a minute, you have me waxing and cleaning and all this stuff. When am I going to learn how to fight? He said, don't worry about the result, just do the process. And that's all I did. I didn't worry about it. I did every step 1 through 12, just like it's described in the Big Book with everything I had in me. I had to put God on my 4-step because I couldn't do this without God. And I couldn't find a way to get back to God. Yes, I had a God in my life, but I didn't believe he could work for me. I still was angry at him for how he took my little girl away from me so early. And when I put God on that 4-step, I realized some things. God didn't give my little girl that medication. The doctors at Children's Hospital did. God didn't, when I asked God to save my little girl and to save her life and take mine, when did God start working for me instead of me working for him? I cursed God for taking my vision away from me. No, God left God left me with 30% vision. I can see every one of you guys, and I can work for myself. I've been doing taxes, and I do them. I don't have to work for anybody else. I'm self-supporting by my own contributions. And when I started looking at life differently, life started looking differently back at me. They call it the psychic change and that rearrangement, but I call it looking at life differently. And when I looked at it differently and looked back at me, I had to really look at it because I always was so angry that God took my little girl so early. Why did I only get those few years? And I had to look at it like this. When God looked down on earth and he was about to put her here, he said, little girl, you're going to suffer so badly those last 4 months of your life, and you're going to die a horrible, painful death. But what I'm going to do for you is this. I'm going to put you with the family that's going to love you every single day of her life. Put her with me, with my wife and my son. And the one thing I could say is I love that little girl every single day of her life. It's not one day she went that wasn't loved. And I had to fix things with my mom. And I had to fix things with my family. Because I always say it that I'm not hurting anybody but myself. But that wasn't true. I was hurting everybody in my family. And I was the missing piece. And with my mom, I had to do a hell of an amends. And I did that amends process as well as I could possibly do it with my brothers, with my mom, with my family, with everyone. And my mom, we ended up going on cruises together on this last 90th birthday that she had. Well, hell, she just had her 91st birthday a couple of days ago on the 1st. And I'm there. And my brothers are there. And see, I'm the guy that she was afraid of. And now I'm the guy, I'm one of the few guys with COVID who gets to come in there. You know, my brother that lives there and then me, you know, and God is so good. It's only due to you and to this fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'm running out of time, and I really didn't do this that well. I don't know what I was talking about tonight, but I got to tell you one more thing. When I did those amends, my mom, we were in the car, and she went to do a COVID test with us. Told me, she said, Reggie, you know what? Because me and my brother were talking, Ralph, we're talking about amends. And she said, my mom said, You guys, yeah, you did amends with me, but do you know that when that girl stole my car, your niece had to pay to get that car out of impound? And I'm like, oh, shit. Never even thought of it. And I called my niece, and I said, I need to do an amends with you. And I knew she wasn't going to, she didn't want to accept the money. That's why I always talk to my sponsor first, new friends, always. And I knew I was going to force it on her. And I said, niece, I have to give you the money. And I said, is there any other way that I harm you? And she surprised. She said, yes, uncle. Told me. She said, uncle, all those years you were in that room on Thanksgiving and you wouldn't come out. She said, my best memories are on the Christmases when we were growing up. And she said, you would always take all the kids and you put us on your knees and you would tell us all these stories that you would make up about you and Santa Claus and the Easter Bunny and Harry Potter, and you would have us all laughing. And I wanted you to tell those stories to my kids. That I wanted you to be able to come out and look me in the eye and tell me you love me. I wanted to be able to come out and you hug me. She said, all these years, she said, I thought I lost you. And she said, it was a long time, Uncle. She said, all those years, she said it was 16 years and I really just never thought you'd come back. She said, I gave up on it. And she said, I'm so happy to have you back. That's only due to you and Alcoholics Anonymous. Every single thing that I have, every single thing that I do is due to you and Alcoholics Anonymous. The reason that I put my name in the chat and I send these meeting links out all the time are due to you and Alcoholics Anonymous, because I understand what my role is here. More God, less Reggie. See, I don't worry about me anymore. I don't care what anybody says about me. I don't worry about me. I don't trip off of Reggie anymore. All I worry about is God's kids. What can I do every single day when I wake up to help one of God's kids? Because see, I'm not going to get caught slipping again. I'm a cautionary tale, but I'm a tale of redemption. I'm walking in my own brand of dignity. And like my sponsor said, I always keep my head up and know I'm a child of God. New friends, I want to tell you three things. Trust God, clean house, work with others. And we owe. Well, I'm not going to say that. I owe. I had 16 years where God was lugging me on his back like a backpack. You know, when I was cursing God all those years, and I thought that he had left me. And all that time he was carrying me. And I owe for that. And I owe a debt of gratitude to all of you in Alcoholics Anonymous and the debt of service. I want to thank you, Inette, again, for asking me to come out. And I hope that somebody got something out of this tonight. My name is Reggie White. I'm an alcoholic.
Oh, my gosh. Let's give Reggie another round of applause. That was powerful. Thank you so much for your service, Reggie. Woo!
Thank you.
Woo! Good job, Reggie.
Thank you, Reggie.
Awesome story.
Yeah, Reggie.